2006, okay, 2006, this guy, Richard Dawkins, writes a book called The God Delusion. Basically, stepping out of history of religion, and particularly Christianity, he's got a big piece about Christianity. He writes this book basically going, you must be mad, believe in God. And he begins that book with a thought experiment and says, imagine a world with no religion. What would it be like? So, on your tables, imagine a world with no religion. And tell me what it would be like. Go on, you've got a minute, have a discussion on the world with no religion. What's going to be like?
To go on, I'm going to stop you there, because I'm sure you've got ideas already. Tell me, what's a world without religion going to be like? Anybody?
Chaos.
Thank you. Far less charity. That's really interesting. I'm going to come back to that. Survival of the fittest. Yeah, be out there on the streets, wouldn't it? Less wars, yeah, you see, really interesting. A lot of people go, oh yeah, a lot of the wars caused by religion and things like that. It's an interesting debate. Anything else? Okay, so interesting enough, Richard Dawkins paints a view of what he thinks this world without religion would be. Tolerant, understanding, fair society. However, he presents little or no evidence as to why that would be the case. And in fact, it's hard for him to argue because the wealth of evidence actually goes the opposite way round. It was interesting when I was researching this, I looked at Christianity and society just to kind of find out what influence and effect it has. And one of the first hits I got was from the Houses of Parliament. Yeah, like, really? So Hansard is the record of what's said in the Houses of Parliament. In March 2023, so this year, there was a debate in the Houses of Parliament on Christianity in society. Guy called Nick Fletcher, he's an MP for Don Valley, put it forward, yeah? And there's a record of this debate. And it's really good stuff. The Christian MP standing up and saying what it means to be a Christian. And Nick says this. It was the Christian faith that moved John Locke to develop our understanding of religious toleration. It was the Christian faith that compelled William Wilberforce, whom my right honourable friend has just mentioned, to fight the slave trade, set up homes for the elderly, and established the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. It was the Christian faith that moved Lord Shaftesbury to campaign for better working conditions and provisions for the mentally ill. It was Christianity that inspired Hannah Moore to set up free schools for the poor. Again, it was Christianity that prompted Josiah Wedgwood to revolutionise working conditions in his factories. And it was the Christian faith that led Elizabeth Fry to campaign for prison reform. There is a strong tradition in our country of the Christian faith being a great force for good. And that's not just in the past. It's interesting you mentioned charities. Many of us know the work of food banks. There are about 2,000 food banks in the UK. 60% of those are run by the Trussell Trust, a charity based on, shaped, and guided on Christian principles. Why do Christians get involved? Why this whole drive that we say, look, we should be out there doing good? It's precisely because of passages like this one. Verses 1 and 2. Look at that. Be obedient. Don't slander people. Do what's good. Be peaceable, considerate, and be gentle to everyone. You see, in the previous passage, in chapter 2, Paul has been talking about Christians and about how they should be living, but it's a bit more of an internal thing. It's like your private life as a Christian. And he says, the grace of God teaches us to say no to ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright and godly lives in this present age. It's kind of a bit of an internal thing, that hidden stuff that you should be doing. Chapter 3, he switches it. And he said, right, let's talk about how you're seen in public. And he says, obedient, peaceable, considerate, and gentle. Now, when I say that, some of you are now settling back in your seats. Because to be honest, you don't really need to hear this talk, do you? Yeah? You're doing that little mental switch-off thing. You can just zone me out for the next 20 minutes, then have a cup of coffee, last song, and you're fine. Because to be honest, this is the standard Christian talk about being nice, isn't it? You've probably heard it a dozen times already. Probably this year you've heard it a dozen times. Let's be nice as Christians, okay? Let's do nice stuff and things like that. This week, I had to drive up to Newcastle and back 12 hours in the car. It was a Northumbrian Water had an innovation festival. As you know, I'm an innovation manager, so I had to be there. So I had plenty of time driving on the road and thinking about it. And as I was driving around, I was thinking, do you know what? Christian living, living as a Christian, is a little like driving. You think, really? How is Christian living like driving? Let me explain. Number one, it doesn't come naturally. Those of you that drive or have been or are learning to drive, do you remember the first time you got in a car? Okay, that very first moment when you try and learn to drive and the wheel doesn't work properly and suddenly, and you always thought driving's pretty easy because you watch your parents just jump in the car, come on, let's go to the shops, everybody, and they're off and such like, so you think it's easy, and then suddenly you get in the car and it's not easy. And you're suddenly going, what, I've got a steer, and I've got pedals and the indicators. My very first time I got in the car, pulled out from my driveway, curbed it straight away. Didn't know how to get the wheel correct like that. It was awful. Okay? You see, the thing is nobody is born a driver. It's something that you have to learn. Nobody is born being obedient, peaceable, considerate and gentle to others. Nobody's born that way. In fact, Paul deliberately says it's the opposite. Look down at the passage. Verse 3. At one time we too were foolish, disobedient, deceived, enslaved by all kinds of passions and pleasures. We lived in malice and envy, being hated and hating one another. Paul actually says, no, look, that's our natural state. We have to learn. We have to learn to be obedient, peaceable, considerate, and gentle to others. So, yeah, the first thing I want to say is, look, you know, we're not naturally like that. It's something that we need to do. Physically go out of our way and say, I will be like this, because you're not born that way. The other bit, as well, I was thinking about as I was driving, is I noticed that your mind wanders when you're driving. Yeah, you start to go off, particularly when you get those long trips and your mind starts to wander a bit. Have you ever had that thing where you drive somewhere and you can't remember how you got there? Yes, people, yes, I know that one. Okay, it's that kind of wandering, and you kind of go into autopilot. Yeah, you're just kind of like just wandering, and you get to work, and you're kind of like, I don't know how I got here. Yeah, and if I said to you, did you do indications? Well, I'm pretty certain I did. Can't recall doing it, but I'm pretty certain I was indicating and doing all that kind of stuff. You see, the trouble is, as Christians, is we do the same. We go into autopilot. It just becomes a matter of, yeah, we've done it so many times before, we just kind of switch off. It's like when you first learn to drive, you get in the car. Yeah, do you remember this? You get in the car and then you go, right, let me just check my mirrors. Mirror, 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 check over my shoulder, adjust the seat. Yeah, make sure the steering wheel's exactly, yes, everything checked. Oh, there's a car, wait. And then by the time you get to our age, you just jump in the cars and just go, right, I'm just going to, whew, where did that come from? Well, it was right there in your mirror. The trouble is, you're just on autopilot. When you're a young Christian, you're out there looking around and going, how can I help? How can I show love? How can I show compassion? How can I be peaceful? How can I be gentle to others? Because you've just become a Christian, you're like, wow, I've got to do this. And unfortunately, and I point to some of us who have been Christians for years, we go on autopilot. You go back home and somebody says, how was church? Good. What was the talk on? I'm going to say Galatians. Yeah, possibly. I think maybe Galatians. What was the preacher saying? Something about listening to sermons and something else, but I didn't catch that. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like that, because we just go on autopilot. And if I stopped you and said, look, being a Christian, according to Paul here, you know, peaceable, considerate, okay, gentle, yeah, obedient. Did you do that? And you go, I'm pretty certain I did. I can't remember any specific incidences, but I'm pretty certain I got there. We go on autopilot. And then, of course, the other bit that we get is we get bad behaviours as well. Do you remember 10 to 2? Hands on the wheel, 10 to 2, which is where you start with until you get, you know, a few years in and you go, actually, I know better, I'm going to do it one-handed, round the corner. drinking coffee at the same time. Yeah? Okay? Because we know better. Suddenly we're the experts. Yes, of course they say 10 to 2, but actually with my arm length and how I've got it adjusted, one-handed with coffee is better. They did a survey apparently of people in America recently where they said, what's your driving like when you're texting? Yeah, and 25% of Americans actually said their driver was better than the average person when they weren't texting. So basically saying, well, I'm texting, I'm better than everybody else anyway, because I'm so much better. Okay, they have this arrogance that just says, I know best. And we get into these bad habits. Tailgating. Yes, or a load of that going up the motorway. Where people are trying to come in through the back of your car. Yeah? Or effectively, apparently what they're trying to do is read the serial number on your exhaust. That's why they come so close. But unfortunately, we do the same as Christians. We get into bad habits. We've done it for so long that we just think we know better. And we start to become selfish. And instead of going up and talking to those new people, do you know what? My time is more important and I'm busy and I can't do that. Yeah? And so we start to become selfish and say, I know better. I know what I'm doing. I've done this for so long. You know, the Department of Transport knows as a driver you become like that. Thankfully, they put up a load of signs to remind you how to drive. Yeah? Signs all over the place. Have you ever come up to a roundabout and go, it's a roundabout. Why on earth on a roundabout do they put a big arrow to show me which way to go round a roundabout? As if I need to know that. I always remember the old bloke who I saw in Lewis going round a roundabout the wrong direction. You see, that's why they stick the signs in there, because they recognise actually we turn off, we zone out, we just forget. And they go, for that 1% of times that you are not paying attention, we're going to tell you because the consequences are really important. Why does God, all the way through his word, again and again and again, tell Christians how they should be living, how they should be reacting towards other people, how they should be treating them? Couldn't he just do it once and God goes, no, because you doze off, fall asleep and zone out. And so I will do it again and again and again. Because the consequences of when you go on autopilot as a Christian, when you get your bad behaviour, the consequences of that upon how other people perceive Christians, well, that's really important. So God says, no, I'm going to keep telling you. Of course, there is one big difference about driving and Christian living, which is the motivation for why you obey the laws, why you do the stuff that you do. You know, when you're driving, why do we obey all the road signs and the speed cameras and such like, and we don't drive on the wrong side of the road unless you're in the continent and things like that? Why? Because it's dangerous and it's illegal. We look at the consequences. We could end up in court or we can end up being hurt, and so we go, that's why I'm going to obey. Why do we follow what God is saying and live our lives his way? Paul sets that out here, verses 4 and onwards. But when the kindness and love of God our Saviour appeared, he saved us. Not because of righteous things we'd done, but because of his mercy. He's saying, look, basically, we don't deserve this. We don't deserve all the mercy God has shown us. He's just poured that all out on us. And the result is, that's why we live like this. I always say, and it's a phrase I've used a lot, so sorry if you heard it from me before, but I go, we don't do this stuff to gain a relationship with God. We do it because we have a relationship with God. He's done so much for us, and therefore we live our lives for him. And as a result of that, we live differently. In the States, they did a survey. They asked US students, and they said, in terms of driving, how do you rank yourself? Okay, US students, okay, in terms of your peer groups, amongst all your friends, how do you rank yourself as a driver? 93% of students put themselves in the top 50% of drivers. I'm going to tell you now the maths for that doesn't work. What it is this effect where basically, yeah, people overrate their abilities and they think, no, actually, I'm a lot better at this than I actually am. And Paul has got exactly that issue with the people he's writing to. Look down at this, verses 9, 10 and 11. Avoid foolish controversies, genealogies and arguments and quarrels about the law, because these are unprofitable. profitable and useless. He's actually writing to Christian believers here. If they're arguing about the law, that's not with people that don't understand it. That's not with the Gentiles. He's arguing with people that are part of the church. And he's saying, look, within your churches, there's loads of people that just think they know best. You know, basically, it's those kind of divisive people that say, I think this is really important, and I'm going to argue with you about it and tell you what my views are and what you think is wrong. You need to listen to me. Now, let's make it clear. This is not about doctrine. This is not about fundamental issues of things like, was Jesus the Son of God? Did he die on the cross? Was he raised from the dead? That's doctrine. That's important. And every single time those things come up, absolutely right that we argue and discuss those matters. That's what Paul does all the way through his life. He argues doctrine. But that's not what he's talking about here. The things that Paul is talking about, that these churches are involved in, is they're arguing about trivial stuff. Well, you know, it's a good thing, obviously, that that's died out and no longer happens, isn't it? Ah, good thing our churches no longer argue and discuss about trivial stuff. Yeah, otherwise, you know, otherwise you would hear all sorts of stupid comments and complaints within our churches, wouldn't you? You know, you'd hear people complaining about what people wear to church, whether it's appropriate at all or not. You'd hear people correcting other people when they do a reading because they felt that they didn't pronounce the words exactly right. You would hear people complaining about the music that's been chosen or how it's played. You would hear people moaning about who serves coffee. See, the sad thing is we're exactly like this church that Paul is writing to. Not just CBC, but all of our churches are like that. All of our churches, unfortunately, still have exactly what is going on here. We have people that complain and people that comment about what's going on. Last week, I had an opportunity to chat with someone who was new to our church. Sat down and was telling me about their experience. And they said when they came through the door, it was absolutely amazing. They loved it. The welcome they got, how they may be made to feel part of this church, and the teaching that they're getting has absolutely blown this person away. That's fantastic. There is so much that this church is doing really, really well. So much that's really encouraging. So much great stuff. But sadly, there are people that struggle as well in our church. And really sadly, it's very often because of things that are said to them. Conscious of teenagers here. I know that you lot have been picked up on what you wear at times. Whether it's right to wear that into a service, into a church. Bible readings. I know someone that really has said, I'm not going to read up the front again, because the first time they did it, somebody came up straight afterwards and told them all the words they got wrong. I'm aware of musicians who are disengaging from the services because although they spend their week planning and practicing and getting ready, getting all the music out and coming up early and rehearsing and practicing and going through all of that, as soon as the service ends, somebody comes over and tells them that they didn't really appreciate the music and what they did. Look, we are all different. Thankfully for that, God made us different people. Yeah? God in his grace decided not to clone you. Okay? We are all different, and as a result of that, we will have different views, different opinions, and different likes. The question is how do we deal with that difference? How do we deal with the fact that people aren't the same as us? Now, I'd like to think that those people that comment and complain did so because actually they believed they were helping and they believed they were encouraging someone when they said that. But the truth is it wasn't, because I've had to speak with people that have had that. And frequently it's not received in that way. And so therefore, this talk is a plea for everybody in our church, morning service, afternoon service, myself, everybody. Let's start living Titus 3. Be gentle towards everyone. See, that's a biblical principle, isn't it? Think about what you're saying and be gentle to other people. Recognize how other people may receive what you're saying. How we act towards one another. Speak words of love and think about those conversations that you have, how you can leave someone better for it. How you can encourage someone in their faith. How people may grow as a result of having a conversation with you. Now, don't get me wrong, there will be times when we need to do correction. There will be times when we need to go to somebody and say, actually, that's really not helpful. When you do that, that really doesn't help. But we need to be gentle when we do that. And I'll be honest, if you're struggling to do that in a gentle manner, if there's someone you're going, I don't know how I can do it gently with them, then go and speak to somebody else and say, how do I do this? How can I be gentle towards everyone? How can I speak love? You know, the majority of what we do here is fantastic and excellent. I was really worried about doing this because I was thinking, imagine if somebody new had come in today. Yeah. And they're listening to this. Oh, my word. What have I walked into? What is this church like? Okay. No. So much of what we do is fantastic. It's wonderful. This is not a deeply troubled church. It's just an average church. But the point is, as Christian believers, we need to spur one another on to greater love. And encourage one another. You know, have you ever seen spurs on a horse? Or at least on a horse rider? They're not exactly nice. It's not a gentle tap on the sides to the horse saying, come on, could you go a little bit faster, please? It's basically driving that horse forward and saying, we will go forward together faster. And the Bible says, look, spur one another on. Be gentle towards everyone. Do you know the really interesting thing? Dawkins wrote that in 2006. In 2019, the Times published this article, an interview with Richard Dawkins. Ending religion is a bad idea, says Richard Dawkins. He changed his mind. Having previously said, imagine a world without religion, how wonderful it would be, he changed his mind and said, no, actually, I was wrong. Actually, I was wrong. I'd like to think that part of the reason why he did that was how people engaged with him. I know that some people did try and blast him, but there were people that got aside Richard and just talked with him and explained to him and showed him the witness of Christian believers and showed him how Christians are a positive and helpful influence in society because they are gentle with everyone. And it makes someone who is a profound atheist turn around and say, a world without Christianity is a worse place. Because of the difference that Christian makes. Paul stresses salvation here. He says, look, you have been saved. You've been given so much. Now, as a result, you turn round and you live for me. And it means you watch what you say and you think before you talk. And you become obedient. You become peaceable. You become considerate. And you become gentle to everyone that you engage with. Amen.